Cue the fancy intro music. This is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom gives you the tips, tools, and resources you need to define and achieve success on your own terms, so you can make great money doing what you love and have the time and freedom to enjoy it. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Lisa Robin Young. Let's get started. Ah, the joys of home ownership. As I record this episode, it's December, and fall is finally starting to appear here in Mississippi. It's getting chilly, and the greenery is finally starting to get some color popping through. Well, the greenery that's left, because down here, the leaves start falling before they start turning colors. And so the leaves that are left are now starting to turn from green to these lovely fall shades. And of course, they're falling off the trees. So it won't be long, and we won't have any leaves on the trees. I know some of you guys are like, what are you talking about? There's snow. It's winter. Like, not down here, not yet. Anyways, so in the process of all of this, my husband is trying to get all the yard work handled before it's too cold to work outside. And he spent the last couple of weekends playing lumberjack in our backyard, chopping down years of overgrowth along the back fence line of our property. And our backyard has a terrace. It's got three levels to it. And the topmost level was so overgrown, we didn't even know what it looked like. I thought it was just a hill. And apparently there's a flat space up there and there are steps that lead up to it. And we couldn't see it because of all of the overgrowth. We found them when we finished mowing everything down and tearing stuff out. So Jim is calling it Machu Picchu 2. He wants to set up lawn chairs and get a chimney so that we can sit up there and be masters of all we survey, which is, you know, the backyard. And I'm telling him, you know, maybe next spring, dear, because it's getting a little nippy for me to want to be sitting outside on the top of the hill so that the wind can hit me in the face in the middle of winter. So this newly mowed plateau backs up to the fence line at the back of the property, which was drowning in scrub oak, scrub maple, these wood saplings, thorny vines, and some of the trees were, you know, 8-10 inches in diameter. They were pretty large. And we don't want to take out all the trees because shady spots are a welcome retreat in the heat of a Mississippi summer. And some of them were big trees that would take decades to regrow and get that kind of leaf cover. But some of those trees were encroaching on the garden wall. Some of them were half dead and threatening the health of other trees on the fence line. And we still needed to cut all that brush back to see how much yard we actually had because we want to put in a pool and we got to make sure we get enough space back there to do it. So clearing it all out had to be done. And I just felt overwhelmed looking at the whole project. I didn't know where to begin. I didn't know what to do. Thankfully, my husband's on the stick and he had a plan. He knew what he wanted things to look like. He knew how he wanted to thin everything out. He knew what he wanted to keep and what he wanted to cut. So for me, it was just stay out of the way. And then once it was all chopped down, help him make piles so that he could then, you know, take advantage of our new fire pit and set everything on fire. So he pulled down the vines and chopped the branches and I did the raking, you know, and I'm not slamming the old owners. This house has been bounced around a couple of times before we got a hold of it. So, you know, the backyard was pretty much neglected. And you know, the old owners, they had two kids under two, so they didn't have enough spoons to deal with a backyard when they were like trying to deal with babies. And I totally get that. So now it's ours and now we get to do with it what we want to, and we get to make it look the way we want to. And so we had to do all of this backbreaking yard work. And so by the time we finished, I could see the fence again. Miracle of miracles. Look, there's a fence. I can see it out my office window. And the handful of trees that are left look like they belong there. Like they were intentionally chosen to be planted in those spaces instead of, oh, that's just where they sprung up. Right. And we have this hawthorn tree in the backyard that now when the light comes, when the sun shines, you know, late afternoon, it has this nice dappled texture and appearance to it. And it's really a beautiful tree to look at, even when it doesn't have any leaves on it because of the way the light hits it. And we couldn't have seen any of that if we'd have just left everything all overgrown and janky. We also managed to reclaim that upper tier of our yard. And now we actually have more space that we can enjoy throughout the year. And I hear you. Lisa, why in the name of all things holy are you talking about landscaping when this is a business podcast? Bear with me, okay? Because pruning your yard is a lot like picking a niche, dun, 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 or a niche. I'm going to say niche, just prepare you for that, okay? So pruning your yard's a lot like picking a niche. You've got to get clear on what you want and what you don't. You got to let go of the things that don't serve you. And in the process, you free up your resources and you create more light and spaciousness within your business. How is that for a segue? Check me out. So niching down seems to be this thing that you hear a lot of people say that you need to do, but then they don't tell you how. And like so many things in business, honestly, there really is no one right way to figure it out, except to say that the way that works for you is the way to figure it out, okay? And I've talked about this before in previous seasons, and I think since season two, we talked about customer avatars and whether or not you even need one. And last season, I shared my 8-step approach to nailing your niche, okay? Which is, it's kind of like a mini workshop. So if you haven't checked it out, you'll probably want to do that. Links to all of our back episodes are inside the Rising Tide member area on the website. So just hop on over to creativefreedomshow.com and you can log in there. It's free. So all those resources are there waiting for you if you haven't already done that. But this time, we're talking about finding a niche, a profitable niche, in a way that's less systematic, a way that's a little more touchy-feely, and still guarantees that you're in alignment with your values and beliefs. So if you're a chaotic, or if you're someone who felt a little overwhelmed by last season's 8-step episode, then this quick and dirty approach might feel a little bit easier to navigate, especially if you're just getting started. Because if you're just getting started, you probably don't have a lot of external data to validate whether or not your niche is financially profitable. And I mean, let's be clear, you can pick any old niche. And you can even pick a niche that's profitable, but if it's not one that's resonant for you and in alignment with your values and beliefs, it's not going to be long before you're burned out and you're like, forget this, and you're flipping tables and you're deciding you're going to go do something else. Now, I will say, I don't encourage any of my clients who are new to business to start niching down too soon, because that's how you miss an audience that you might not have even considered. Okay, and I want to say also, this is not the same as trying to be all things to all people. When you've got a clear idea of what your audience is and what your niche is going to be, then go for it. Go all in and really focus. But think of it like this. If Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, had stayed focused on trying to find a treatment for angina and serving angina patients, they never would have found their best audience for Viagra. Okay? And so instead of scrapping Viagra, they shifted to a new niche, a new audience, and the rest, as they say, is history. So I want you to think about that, because a lot of products find their market after they flopped in a different one. Katy Perry started as a Christian music artist. Yes, a Christian music artist. And that went over like a lead balloon. We've got a link in the show notes to one of the songs off of her album as a Christian artist, and you can hear all the pop overtones are there. Her wide range, her growl, it's all there in this early performance as Katie Hudson. But the song lyrics don't fit right, and it feels kind of awkward to listen to. She tried hard, and I mean, she was younger then, but I mean, she was writing these songs, and it still wasn't a good fit. She was not going to make it in the Christian music market. Not to any fault of her own. She was really trying hard, and she had a good voice. It just really wasn't a good fit for that audience. And that's where a lot of singers would have just given up. But by pairing her with a pop songwriter like Bonnie McKee, she developed the song Roar. Okay, just as empowering as any of the Christian music that she was working on. But this secular message, which also would have fit in a contemporary Christian setting, just to be clear. Okay, this secular message really lets Katie's vocal peculiarities shine. And it works so much better in a pop format than it ever could have as a contemporary Christian music song, if she had tried to put it that way. And I mean, Bonnie McKee probably would have been like, I don't do Christian music, right? So she shifted her audience and things blew up for her. Shania Twain, she wanted to be a rock star. She did not want to be a country singer. She resisted the idea of becoming a country singer, even though people kept telling her, oh my God, girl, you need to be in country music. Oh my God, girl, get yourself in some country music. And she was like, I don't want to do that. But timing was on her side, because she came of age just as everything was starting to cross over and we started getting this country pop sound. And so she ended up becoming like the best-selling female country artist of all time, because she was able to pull on those rock influences that she was so drawn to and carve out a space for herself in country music that allowed her to really shine in all of the aspects of what she was really good at. Now, had she stayed on the I want to be a rock star kick, we may never have had Whose Bed Have Your Boots Been Under? Business involves some experimentation when you're just starting out, period. You got to try things and you're going to get stuff wrong. That's just part and parcel to how it goes. But when you figure that piece out and it's time to start narrowing your field of focus, what I'm about to teach you is going to set you up for success. As a creative entrepreneur, you have all the ideas. You're ready to do it all and serve all the people. And in the beginning, that can be a helpful way to try new things and see what feels most fulfilling for you. Remember, though, that success isn't just about the money. Yes, money is important. Don't get me wrong. I totally believe that the money is important. And it's not the only thing that matters, especially if you're a creative entrepreneur. I talk about return on resources all the time. So here's what I found to be true for myself and my clients. A profitable niche is one that is narrowed down just enough and mirrors your passion. So what does that look like? That's where we're headed today. Now, for some folks, narrowing down may feel like you're closing the doors on opportunities to make money. It might feel limiting. Oh my God, you're putting me in a straitjacket. But here's how I like to look at it. If you've got the magic paintbrush and you can design your business to be full of the people you most want to work with, the people you most want to experience your work, you naturally want to focus your marketing and messaging to those people. Now, that doesn't mean other people won't show up. Of course they will. Because I'm not a big country music fan, but I own some of Shania Twain's music. I'm not a big Katy Perry fan either, but I enjoy some of her music as well. And this just proves that there will be people outside of your niche who want your brilliance too, when it's a fit for them. But your raving fans, they want all your stuff. They buy every album, attend every event that's possible for them, and they want to participate in the stuff that they can't. And they probably feel a little envious or jealous of the folks who get to participate when they can't. They tell their friends and family about you. They buy your stuff as gifts for other people. They reply to your marketing emails. They comment on your social posts religiously. And simply put, they want more of you in their life. They're hanging pictures of you on their wall. Okay? They're going to events to get their picture taken with you. They're tracking you down on the street going, oh my God, it's you. That's who you want to be marketing to. Think about your marketing resources. Do you really want to invest your resources trying to market to someone who just wants a few things or somebody who wants it all? It's going to take the same amount of effort to create your marketing campaigns and materials either way. So in that respect, the effort's a wash, but by getting clear on who you're really here to serve, it's easier for you to find and reach more of them, which means your marketing efforts are more productive, more efficient. And that probably means your business is more profitable too, because you're investing your resources where you'll get the best results. I mean, you could plaster your marketing everywhere, but that's a shotgun approach and that won't be nearly as effective in the long run. You're not Coca-Cola. You probably don't have deep pockets to just run ads everywhere so that everybody can see your brand colors. I mean, if you do, great, go ahead. Because, you know, our podcast is looking for advertisers and you can hit me up and we'll talk. But even Coke is strategic about where they're spending their millions of dollars on advertising. So my suggestion is to focus in on your best audience. Focus in on your raving fans. Put your investment of time, energy, and marketing resources there. And then if they want to tell other people about you, have at it. But you aren't the one investing those resources. Your raving fans are. And if you haven't heard it already, third-party endorsements are almost always a better way to market. Because if you tell people you're awesome, it doesn't sound nearly as convincing as when other people do it for you. That's why I use testimonials. That's why I have my clients go, oh my God, Lisa's the best thing since sliced bread. Because if I sat here and told you I'm the best thing since sliced bread, you'd be like, oh my God, she's so arrogant. I can't. I just can't. Who does she think she is? What? So it's not about limiting your work, nor is it about limiting your potential. It's about calling the right people to your work, inviting them in. And that in turn gives you the freedom to say yes or no to anybody outside your niche, instead of feeling pressured to work with anybody with a pulse because you haven't been clear enough for the world to truly recognize who it is that you serve. Think of it like specializing. Because Shania Twain can play rock music and Katy Perry can sing Christian music, but they choose to stay in the lane where they make the most impact. They specialize in a particular genre of music. In medicine, a general practitioner doesn't generally charge the same rates as a specialist. At least that's not what my husband's co-insurance copays tell me, okay? But they're both doctors and they're both fully capable of examining a patient and coming up with a diagnosis. The specialist, though, has chosen to work in a particular subfield inside the medical profession, focusing most of their time, energy, and resources in helping the patients in their particular area of specialization. and they charge accordingly for that specialty. So think about your own great work. How do you want to specialize? Do you want to specialize in a particular media or a particular audience or both? I create educational inspirational content that's designed for creative entrepreneurs. I could just as easily make things more corporate or stick solely to the how-to steps and leave out any inspirational or entertaining elements. But that's part of my specialty. Because I believe if it ain't fun, I'm not going to stick with it in the long run. So music and entertainment are part of my specialization. There are lots of business coaches in the world, and more of them are serving creative entrepreneurs. But I specialize in the creative freedom entrepreneur types and delivering my knowledge in a fun, approachable, enjoyable way. At least that's what I hope I'm doing. So please let me know if that's not the case, because that's really what I'm trying to do here. Take a look at your own business. Perhaps, let's say you offer copywriting services. Could you niche down and choose to specialize in writing copy for photographers? Or could you niche that down even further and offer specialty copywriting services for wedding photographers? Or get even more specific and focus on luxury destination wedding photographers if you really want to go high end. Now, does that mean you can't do copy for boudoir photographers or graphic designers or business coaches? No. It just means you don't have to. It just means you're not calling to those people on a daily basis. You're not limited to the kind of copywriting that you do. You're just calling to the people that you most want to work with. Because while many photographers may be looking for copywriting services, wedding photographers will start to see you as the go-to copywriter for their specific industry. And in the high-end luxury market, word-of-mouth referrals could keep you as busy as you want to be if your copy is brilliant. When you become known in your market, referrals come more easily. When I build myself as a direct sales coach, I had leaders inside big sales organizations referring their teams to me because that was my specialty. And when I decided to focus on creative entrepreneurs, my colleagues started referring more creatives to me. Now, I still work with a few direct sellers, but I don't get those old referrals from the companies nearly as much anymore, even though my training and my coaching support are just as helpful, and I still have many direct sellers on my email list. But because I'm not speaking directly to direct sellers anymore, they're looking for somebody else who is. And that's great. Now, I love my direct selling clients. And I recognized that I wanted to reach a more diverse audience than just direct sellers. So I opened up to more types of entrepreneurs, creatives across the spectrum. Could I work with executives? Sure. Coaching isn't that different from one industry to another. But I'm more intimately connected to creatives. I understand their unique struggles and challenges better, and I like playing in that arena. I like seeing the light bulb come on for them. My husband is a graphic designer, and he's done all kinds of corporate design work, including a Grammy-nominated album project. And he always rolls his eyes when I mention that, because he's such a down-to-earth guy, but I'm like, my husband was nominated for a Grammy. What about yours? But the projects that he most enjoys are music projects. You know, does he do other stuff? Sure, he does logos. He does signs, but the stuff that lights him up is music merch. Album covers, t-shirts, and other fun, quirky, creative designs. That's the stuff that he enjoys. Things that are very uncorporate in nature. That's his specialty. What's yours? Narrowing down gives you that competitive edge of being the only or one of the only people that does the thing that you do. And that's what they mean when they say become the go-to person in your industry. There's only one Katy Perry. There's only one Shania Twain. There's only one Grease or Captain America or Erykah Badu. Okay, there's only one you. What do you want to be known for? When you become the go-to, you can specialize in that niche, which means that you can charge a premium. More money, more profits, and more creative freedom, y'all. But what's the point in niching down if what you're doing doesn't mirror your creative passion? Now, our last episode stirred the pot around making sure your business is in alignment for you, in integrity with who you are and what you want to be about in the world. If you're out of alignment, niching down will only piss you off. It's like tightening the screws on a bookshelf that's not in alignment, where one side of the shelf is higher than the other. It might be fine for a while, but with enough pressure on it, eventually something's going to snap and everything's going to fall down. Is what you're doing right now a huge buzzkill for you? Are you good at what you do and do you enjoy it? Just because you're good at it doesn't mean it's meant for you. Sometimes it just means you have a lot of practice at it. Maybe because you felt like you had to do it. And I get it. I've totally been there. But is there something else you do better? Is there something else you're more passionate about delivering in your business? If the answer is yes, then we've got some work to do. And the thing is, it's okay to pivot. Having creative freedom means we can do that. We can put our focus on what brings us joy, so long as we feel safe to do so. Which means you probably shouldn't go tossing away the clients that you currently have, at least not right away. I mean, if they really grate your toast, then be my guest. Tell them to hit the brakes. But if you're not ready to release them, start exploring and experimenting with your passion first. So let's go back to our photographer example. If you're a copywriter for wedding photographers, but your actual passion is more aligned with helping wedding photographers find different avenues of income, then perhaps you can test an offer that includes a business consultation for a wedding photographer client and then see how that goes. Start building that coaching consultation portfolio in a small way before you jump in with both feet. I do that a lot in my business. Test something first before I go all in. In my own business, we started recording music videos a few years ago. Nothing high production value, no big deal. In fact, I actually called them rehearsal videos because I didn't want people to expect that they were fancy in any way, shape, or form. But they gave me an opportunity to practice being in front of the camera as a musician instead of just as a business coach. They also gave me an opportunity to practice editing video in a way that was more like a music video and different from what we typically do in our video show. But most importantly, it gave me a chance to perform in front of an audience without much risk. Because if people hated it, no big deal. I didn't have to keep doing them. And if people liked my voice, my stories, or my humor and wanted to hear more, I had a very low risk way of floating out a new idea to see what I wanted to do with no long-term commitment and nothing serious riding on the back of my business. My business was not going to crumble if this video thing didn't pan out. Those years of early experimentation gave us the green light to do some of the things that we're adding to this season. We've got some new music and videos that are a bit of an upgrade in terms of production value. And it would have been risky for us to start there several years ago. For one thing, my early shoots were in my home, usually at my desk or by the recording equipment. There wasn't room with two kids in the house to do all that extra stuff. The amount of money I would have had to pour into filming locations and costumes and all that stuff would have eaten into the money that I was making at the time. I didn't have a hair and makeup person, no costumes or props to speak of, except on rare occasions, and it was usually something that I found around the house. We had a handful of guests, and they were all friends of mine who came over to visit, and they understood that this was rough and experimental, and it wasn't going to be some Grammy award-winning thing. But mostly, though, it was just me and a single camera and whatever lighting was available in the room at the time. I started where I was with what I had and experimented and grew from there. Now, since those first season videos from Creative Freedom Season 1, we've upgraded our audio twice, our video three times, and our lighting once. Now, this new season adds crew members to our production team, and we've added multiple camera angles to some of the content to get a more professional look and feel. Still, we're not overproduced and we're not going to win any Grammys. But it's definitely a step in a direction that's more in alignment with who I want to be and how I want to be showing up in the world. So here's more on how to narrow down your niche using the Creative Freedom Business Model equation. If you're not familiar, we create business models for our clients using an easy to understand equation. You plus why plus who plus what plus how equals your business model. So let's start with you. What is your passion? What is your core belief or value, and what do you stand for? Define those things without your titles. Really get clear on who you are and what matters to you. Then we move on to why. Why would anybody buy from you? Okay? And you're looking for one main reason, usually tied to why you do what you do. So think about why do you do what you do, and how is that connected to why people might buy from you? For me, one of the pieces that is my why is I do this because I believe everybody has a voice that deserves to be heard by their right audience, and that we all have a gift that this world needs in some way, shape, or form, and that there are far too many creatives out there struggling when all they have to do is lean into who they are and really embrace that and share that with the world so that the world can fall in love with them and give them money. That's why I do what I do. okay, at its core. And there's a group of people who resonate with that idea. And those are the people that I'm trying to reach. And that brings us to the next piece, this who is your offer or your business talking to? Because if your who, if your niche, if your who casts too wide a net, remember our photographer's example, describe your specialty. Okay, my friend calls it a slice of a slice. So I mean, there's lots of entrepreneurs in the world. I'm choosing to work with creative entrepreneurs, right? And I've subcategorized creative entrepreneurs according to my spectrum. Chaotic, chaotic cusp, fusion, linear cusp, and linears, right? So there's these different people that I can work with in different ways. Then we want to talk about what is your offer for them? What's the one main problem that your service or offer is solving? Or the one main thing that your product does for your who? And if you're not serving a pain point, one of the things I like to say is, how do you make their life better? Okay, how does your thing, how does your offer make their life better? This isn't about your specific product or service. It's about the end result for your buyer. So if you're a musician, it might be about building a sense of community or spreading a message or being part of a mission or a tribe, okay? It might be about a political stance in the world. It might be about activism. There's lots of different things that you could be talking about as a musician, even though you're not technically solving a pain, okay? So that's just one example. So think about what your offer is for them. And then we're gonna move on to how. How do you deliver on that what? How do you do it uniquely? What is your competitive edge in that market? So what makes Shania Twain different from Katy Perry? What's the thing that sets you apart from the other people in your market? Let's look at it another way. Remember in the musical Grease, there are five pink ladies, but there's only one Rizzo. There's only one Frenchie. There's only one Jan. There's only one Marty. And of course, there's only one Sandy. Now they all have commonalities or they wouldn't all be in the same club. They wouldn't all be pink ladies. Pink ladies is the niche, but they're also unique. Each one of them, I would go so far as to say, has a preferred different kind of guy and different kinds of guys prefer them. So translate that to you. What market are you in? Who do you prefer to work with? Who's attracted to you and what makes you unique in your field? How are you delivering to them in a way that gets them excited? I perform with music and entertainment and inspiration. Not a lot of business coaches do, right? So in the club of pink ladies known as business coaches, I am this kind of business coach and there are those other kinds of business coaches, but we're all in the same club, right? Just to give you a different way to think about what makes you unique in your field. Now, to make it even easier, we put together a handy dandy cheat sheet for you inside the Rising Tide Learning Library to help you marinate on these questions. You're gonna find it alongside the other season 6 resources that we've developed for each episode inside the Rising Tide member area. In addition, we also have the Find Your Audience workshop and the Raving Fans toolkit, which are part of that courseware that's in there as well. They're all waiting for you to dive into. They are short, easy to digest on-demand trainings to help you figure out who your raving fans are and how to reach them. It's all available inside our free members area on the website. Just go to creativefreedomshow.com, click on the Rising Tide link, and register for your free access today. If you're already a member, then you just have to log in and you can access those materials on the member dashboard. We've got lots of resources to help you find your niche, grow your reach, and increase your income and impact as a creative entrepreneur. This is the moment in each episode where I get to thank you for helping us make a bigger impact in the world. We appreciate our sponsors, our patrons, and appreciate every like, share, tweet, follow, and review that you give about creative freedom. We are one of the fastest growing shows for creative entrepreneurs because of your help. So thank you, thank you, thank you very much. Next time, we're going to look at the top 3 business models for creative entrepreneurs and which models are the best for your type. So be sure you're subscribed to our show to get notifications about our upcoming episodes. I hope that we're going to see you there. And until then, for more inspiration and education to help you end the hustle and own your dreams without selling your soul, come see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.